What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 47 of The Overview. I'm Chanman V, and joined today by Fish Sticks, of course, my co-host. What's up, buddy?
What up? Just got back from the TESPA Collegiate Series Finals yesterday. Feeling pretty good about it.
Awesome.
Happy to be here.
Can't wait to hear about it. We'll definitely be talking about that soon. And then Flame coming back, joining us, pretty much a regular guest host at this point. What's up, buddy?
Not much. Easy week, pretty chill.
Chill. All right. Cool. You're talking about unloading a bunch of stuff earlier today, or at least from your house, right? You're talking about what was it? It was 1-800 junk or something like that.
1-800 got junk. Came and took away all my carpet.
I've never used that service before.
Usually contractors do it.
Yeah. Right.
I had like a underground. I don't even know if it was a legitimate contractor that did my work. So.
I see. So basically you had it done for super cheap, right?
Yeah.
Nice. All right, guys. Well, today we've got a little bit of news that was actually announced or hinted at or something today from Blizzard, maybe pertaining to a new hero. So we'll probably start off with that. And then, of course, Season 3 is ending today, so maybe just get a summary for you guys and just see if we did everything we wanted to do and then see what we have upcoming for Season 4. Then just a bunch of event news, really, or just talking about the events. Ben just mentioned TESPA, which he casted at. Carbon Series started yesterday. Apex, of course, still going on and getting pretty much to the end of the group stages. So there's some interesting things developing there. And then EFRAG was another, I think it was North American only, right? EFRAG, is that right? Was it North American only? Or was it just, maybe it was, I forget if it was just North
American. I think it had European teams.
Yeah,
but I think it was on NA.
Yeah, so another smaller tournament slash league that's going on to what happened. And then at the end, we've got a few questions. We got three email questions that we're going to talk about. We might actually integrate one of the emails with the Season 3 since it pertains to that. Figured we would incorporate that. But why don't we start off with that? Just Season 3 ends today and just kind of like our week in Overwatch, what we've been doing. So actually, Justin H. kind of starts us off with, wanted to see, I guess, what our thoughts were on it, and did we set any Season 3 goals? Did we achieve them? And, if we had any advice for climbing to Masters in Season 4. We'll start off with the first one. Did you guys achieve all the Season 3 goals you guys were wanting to achieve?
Well, you're never going to be fully satisfied. You're doing something wrong if you're completely satisfied, I think. Unless you like make a miraculous climb from gold to GM or something like that, you're probably going to want to continue to climb. But I was able to hit almost 4.2K SR this season, which felt pretty good. Really, really wanted to get up to the top 500 mark, but came pretty damn close after some pretty concerted effort. And I think that's honestly like the thing I'm more excited about talking is like how I got to where I wanted to get to, versus like where I ended up getting exactly. But basically I went through this phase where I was playing every single day consistently for over 2 weeks. And before I jumped into a ranked game, I would go and warm up against bots for 10 to 15 minutes. Not a huge warm up, like 10 to 15 minutes is pretty short, but I really credit that specific action to how I was able to climb consistently, because I've been a lot less consistent since I did hit that high water mark. I've been taking a couple days off here and there. I've traveled. I've done other things. I haven't been able to play every day, and it's been a little less consistent. But there is a stretch where I gained SR every single day for something like 16 days consecutively. Just by, I wasn't playing a ton. I was just playing like 6 or 7 games when I got home from work every day. But because I was playing so consistently every single day and warming up, it just had that really, really, really strong knock-on effect. I jumped from, I think I was probably about like 3,700. And then after 2 weeks, I was up to 4,200. I wanted top 500, but I was pretty happy with just seeing like the concerted effort paying off. And I think that's something that everyone out there, if you're looking to climb, like consistency and warming up are really the best things I could possibly ever suggest for you.
So when you're playing against the AI, I mean, when you're warming up against bots, you're just talking about creating a custom game, I guess, with a bunch of hard AI.
Actually, not even
single play. Like, what is that?
No, I'm actually just playing in the practice range.
Oh, really?
I know a lot of people like making custom games with Anna bots, like headshot only whatever. And that's good too. But for me, it's less like training, more warming up, but I mean, it's both. There's actually some really, really good YouTube tutorials out there that you can check out. I'm going to look it up during the show and come back to you with the name of this one tutorial. But basically, you drill in a couple different ways. You try to track their heads perfectly as they move. Then you try flick shots. Then you just try all kinds of different ways of aiming. You do, you know, try doing like 180s and into flicks. You know, all these different kind of warm-up techniques help so much. And honestly, like, I couldn't credit anything else other than that super consistent practice how I climbed. Yeah.
You know, it'd be really cool.
I'm going to find that video right now.
You know, it'd be really cool is if they added some things to the training facility that were basically those things you're talking about, you know, just creating little mini games, you know, when that has there's no actual competitive aspect to it, but it'd be kind of fun, you know, just to be able to create those things. It's like, it's, a lot of games have that, particularly like Rocket, you know, the Rocket League has that training thing, right? And a lot of the sports games have these like mini camp little drills and things. That'd be cool if Overwatch had those type of things.
Oh yeah, their bot training mode could actually be way better.
Yeah.
But it's good enough. Like, it's good enough for me. It really helps you get your hands warm, which is probably the most important thing. But also, if you do concerted practice, like practice your flicking shots, your tracking, your consistent tracking, all these different things. And guys, it's Overwatch Dojo is the YouTube channel I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I really like some of their videos, particularly. You know, I've shared this with a lot of my friends, and it's helped a lot of people. So Overwatch Dojo, really worth checking out.
Yeah, it's a pretty popular channel at this point, but it's heavily educational. So yeah, definitely check those guys out. Flame, how about you, man? You reach all your season 3 goals?
I don't really know that I had season 3 goals in terms of ladder. I mean, I think I always hover. Like, I never dropped below 4.1, 4.2 generally. Like, I tanked, I think, one day, but my SR like teetered around 4.3, 4.4 for like the majority of the season, I guess. So, I mean, as far as consistency goes, for me, it's fine, I guess. Aside from a few like very large tilt streaks down and then back up again, but I don't know, I'm pretty content. I guess I think I finished like number 220 or something.
Okay. What was the highest in top 500 that you got?
I think at one point I was number 100, like earlier in the season. And then like that number obviously kept climbing up as people kept pushing themselves to go up.
Right.
So like as the season goes on, it gets harder and harder, I guess. Or the number goes up, the average for the top 500. But I just went to like number 100 once and then wound up like tanking all the way down to like almost masters. And then once you get down there, like you just have to like stop playing, come back, start from scratch, do it again. But yeah, like the 300 SR up and down days are the fun ones, I guess.
So 200 is that's the highest, right? Like your personal high?
I mean, season 1 I finished like number 20 or something.
Oh, did you? Oh, wow. Okay.
But
20 is going to be
season one was the good old days where you would like, season one was the good days where like you got 10 points for a win, but like 100 for a loss.
Right. That was brutal. Totally.
Yeah. I was pretty excited season one, but.
Okay. Yeah. For me, season 3, like, but the only goal, and I think I've said this like on this show and as well as Overwatchers, was just trying to get up to plat with my son, you know, just like duo queuing with him. So we were able to do that. And now we're trying to get to diamond, but we kind of ran out of time. But we were actually on our way there. So I, you know, recently it's actually been one of those things. Actually, the entire season was one of those things where we're trying to figure out what we should play like together. So we were experimenting with all kinds of different things. And we've pretty much concluded that me playing Pharah and him playing Zarya and just being able to combo, all combo consistently is hugely effective at that level. So, yeah. So anyways, the next goal for us is Diamond together. And I think we'll be able to do that. One of the reasons we didn't make it to Diamond, by the way, guys, is because I had to ground him for a week. So he didn't get a chance to play because of that. But you know, I have to put that ahead of actual Overwatch goals and dreams. So, hopefully this beginning of this next season, we'll probably get there a little bit sooner.
And back to the consistency thing, yeah. For me, literally taking 3 to 4 days off is enough for me to like drop. Like, I know it sounds dumb, but 2 weeks straight, yeah, of consistent gains, and then I'm gone for a full weekend. I don't play for like 5 days, come back, and I instantly drop like 200 SR. It's come up, and then I don't play for a couple of days and drop again. So it really matters.
I mean,
guys,
is that because of your play, or is that just because of just random?
I mean,
randomness,
luck,
right?
But
I mean,
my it's... play, it's, I don't know. You can't, I don't think it's worthwhile like blaming randomness or crappy teammates. Like, you got to look at your own play, and I'll blame myself for those losses.
Man, yeah, I swapped Mice mid-season, and like that was an easy 200, 300 SR drop.
From what to what?
I don't know. I was like at my peak, whatever I was at. I was close. I was around like number.
What mount?
Oh, I just upgraded Death Adders.
Okay.
I just went from the Chroma to the Elite.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
So I got a free Elite at MLG, but it was just sitting there. But then like the buttons on the Chroma were starting to like.
I don't even know about that mouse, actually. I'm using the Chroma right now.
Me too. I think all of us are. The Chroma.
I don't know. I wouldn't have bought it, but I got someone gave it to me. Like the Razer dude at MLG just gave it to me, and I was like, okay. And then,
is it better? I mean, like what?
The mouse wheel is different. Took me a little bit while to get used to. It's not different. It just has like ridges, so it feels like a cog instead of like a wheel, I guess.
Yeah.
And then I think the clicks feel lighter, but the mouse feels the same. I think the sensor is just better though.
Yeah, I think the cog is a nice touch to it. It's a little bit more feedback, at least whenever you're kind of going through, flipping through things. So cool. Yeah, I might need to try that out. A little Razer plug there. We're not sponsored by Razer, guys, unfortunately. But if you guys do want to sponsor, just let.
No, my Corsair keyboard though. Yeah. I'll recommend the
Corsair keyboard. Might as well just cover everything, right?
Yeah, I don't want people thinking I'm biased.
Yeah, of course.
Corsair keyboard K65.
Yeah. So season 4, guys. Any goals? No big deal. Just play. It's like a week later, so we got a week break, and then we're gonna jump right into season 4.
Honestly, top 500.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna set my goals any lower than that. I mean, I came pretty damn close. In fact, if I don't get top 500 this next season, I'll be a little disappointed. I'm really gonna shoot for it.
Okay, cool. Time. Anything?
I mean, I'm hoping that there's like more news than just me playing ranked for season 4, but we'll see, I guess. I mean, obviously, I want to stay where I'm at because it helps with, like, analyzing and even casting just to, like, play at the higher levels. But I'm hoping that...
Becoming a coach, confirmed?
Well, I mean, it would be easier to coach, right, if you could play with your teammates or your players, right?
Right.
or beat them on ladder regularly.
Sometimes you just have to step in and actually play, like Chance.
Oh, yeah, I've already considered, like, I've thought about it, like, whether or not I should just, like... sign up as like a seventh man on a roster, because it's probably seems like a pretty easy job, like just that sub just in case something bad happens at LAN or something. But
interesting.
No, I don't really know. I mean, I'm obviously gonna try to stay top 500. I think I'm gonna aim more for like figuring out the custom game stuff and like streaming more of that, playing more of that.
Yeah, I still haven't got a chance to do too much there. So have you been playing around at all custom game wise at all, like with the different settings and everything?
I made a few customs like last week. I mean, I've been super busy, but yeah, I tried some new settings. I tried like 90% damage and healing and like increased move speed. It was pretty good. I mean, everything, it felt good, but it's hard to test, I guess, because you need everyone to...
OW Pro Mod. That's what that sounds like.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was good.
Exactly. Okay, cool. Yeah, season 4 for me, just again, like Diamond. I want to play a little bit more Zarya too. Just kind of at least try to work it in there while we're playing, just because... I haven't really played her that much historically, and this season I was starting to play her and having some fun. So hopefully we can do that. And actually for this guy, Justin H., he's any advice for trying to climb two Masters, I guess, from Diamond? You guys notice anything in that range that's particularly good for jumping? from Diamond to Master?
I mean, beyond what I said earlier, just about consistent practice and playing consistently, I'm actually a huge advocate for duo queue with like one other person that you can trust. It's a lot easier to play like at that SR. I mean, I don't know. I think at that SR especially, if it's so important to find just like one other person that you can really consistently trust to do the right thing, to play smart, and then coordinate with you. So I don't know. I'm an advocate. I don't know. Some other people prefer solo queue, but
no, I hate solo queue. I can tell you that right now. I hate it. So at the very least, duo for me. And, you know, and again, at least my son and I can combo that old, you know, just the Zarya Farah combo, which especially on 2 CP maps have been huge for us. So it's nice to do that. We tried the tank healer and all that stuff. That sucked, man. That was really painful when not having any kind of DPS effect on the game for the most part. That was really, really tough. So yeah, anyways, for him, I guess, yeah, just try to, you know, try to do what Fishix was telling you, just kind of stay consistent.
I think I've mentioned this in a previous episode, but if you have a trolley dude on your team that's going to play attack Symmetra and won't switch, play around it. Like,
yeah,
pick something that complements it, even though it's hard, or even bash or whatever. People will troll, and you're not always going to lose those games if you actually play around it. The worst thing that can happen when you have a really headstrong trolley pick person is for you to not adapt to that. So that's my other.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, back to the 2Q. I like solo queued up, and then when I tilt drops, I just like to alt-tize, and I duo queued back with too easy. Like, me and him just duo queued and just like stomped like 10 games in a row or something. But like, every game was a different troll. So like, too easy, he tilts harder than me, I think. Like, he's a little bit more internal raging, but like, he rages just as hard. But he'll start raging before the game even starts. So like, we had a game, I think it was like Gibraltar attack, and we had a Torbjorn, and he just starts losing his mind. I'm like, nah, dude, like, I've won these games before. And again, I just like, you get in voice comms, you tell everyone what to pick, and just be like, all right, guys, we're protecting this Torbjorn. And like, we won that game. We won a game, I think, with like offensive Bastion on like Kanemura or something. It's like, you can make those games wins, but it does take a lot of coordination with your teammates.
It's a different challenge too. Playing the same thing over and over and over can get, you know, a little mundane. So every once in a while, having to adapt around a troll is, you know, adds a little variety to the game. Okay, well, why don't we talk about the new interview that was released by Blizzard, which was released about an hour or two ago. And this interview is from a completely new character. And it's like a news interview. So a spotlight on Nambani and a new character. I think it's Effie or Ife Oladale, is a young character who is being interviewed by the newspaper and talking about just awards or prizes that she's won in the whole AI and robotics field. Given that it's Nambani, it kind of makes sense. And since Nambani is kind of the whole Symmetra type of storyline, right? So there's not much here, to be honest. Look at this. I mean, this is like, I don't even know how many words, maybe like 300 words. Maybe the interview is literally like about 7-8 questions. So lots of stuff to, you know, definitely think of conspiracy or just try to guess what this is all about. Right. And the first thing I think most people are going to think is that this is the new hero that's going to be released, because Jeff Kaplan did say that we're going to be surprised or the next hero is not who we think it is, which means it's not Doomfist, guys, right?
Yeah.
So this is somebody that would be not who I would expect it to be. So what are your thoughts? Is this the new hero, or generally, what do you get from this interview?
I think there's a lot of little hints in this.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, okay, so she's 11 years old.
Yep.
You're not going to play as an 11-year-old. You're not going to be killing an 11-year-old in this game. I really doubt it. I think you're going to be killing her robot creations.
Oh, that's true. I guess, yeah.
I think it's
killing
gonna be
kids,
her
I
robot.
Guess, might be a little bit construed wrong. Yeah.
And that's kind of what everyone's assuming here. If you read through it, obviously there's a couple lines that particularly stick out. I want to create things that make our lives better. And someday my dream is to build something that can keep us safe, like the new OR-15s. I think that would be great. So this line, I think, is probably the most telling line in this whole interview. I have a sneaking suspicion. I don't know if they've, you know, I can't really remember if they've like, because they've done a lot of like news articles and interviews throughout the game's launch and before the game even launched, as they were revealing characters and maps and things like that. I can't remember if they've strictly done things in chronological order, but I have this like sneaking suspicion that Effie is like the creator of Omnix or something like that. Because we've never, what's an OR-15S? Like, we don't know an OR-15S. True. And she talks about robots, but never says Omnic, never says the word Omnic here. So like, I have this like,
oh, so you think it's
hidden theory that like this is before? I don't know. I could be completely wrong about this. At least one thing is clear, is that she's going to either be riding a robot, or you're going to be playing as her robots or something like that. I think that's like undeniable from this.
Or maybe a pet or something like that. Yeah. There's going to be robots involved in some way. What about you, Flame? You think you agree with Fishix here, or you actually think that she's the hero?
No, she's definitely not the hero. I will like bet wrestling rights with Jeff.
Wrestling rights.
She's not.
You can
the
do
hero.
That.
I think
wow,
so.
Wow, I wish I had the ownership of that.
I'm trying to schedule a wrestle with Jeff, prepare for Death BlizzCon 2017 event, but I don't know if that's ever going to happen. But I don't think so, again, because she's too young to be killed in a T for Teen video game.
True. I can see that.
I guess I'm more of a visual kind of person. She seems like she's got headphones on, and she's got like the Lucio-esque hair, and Numbani has like that Lucio concert poster. She's making a tank. So I'm assuming they're just going to release a tank Omnic. Like, if I was going to bet on the hero, I'd say Soundquake will be next. And she's going to be like the Soundquake creator. She's like, oh, Lucio, I love your music. And then just like, instead of amping it up, she literally just like creates sound earthquakes.
Right.
That's my expert analysis on this article, but I have no idea.
That's deep, man. That's deep. I like that. That's
she
actually
might be
a
the
cool theory.
But back to the thing, she might be the starter of the Omnic Crisis. Like, we won't know.
Yeah, I think both of you guys have.
Well, guys, I've been debunked. I've been debunked already. Oh. Michael Chu, who's one of the lead writers, or the lead writer for the Overwatch story, actually addressed this exact question already on Twitter this morning. About an hour and a half ago, I said that date is just a real world published date, and this interview takes place in the present day of the OW timeline. So debunked, but
yeah, I mean, OR-15s already exist, just to debunk even further.
Oh, what are
so like you would expect the OR-15? I mean, I don't know what it is, but it already exists, you know? So it's probably like Omnic's probably already. Maybe it's called the Omnic Rights 15s, and like it's like a different, I don't know.
But putting lore aside, like what. What do you think is the most needed new character in this game, Flame? Like, what's lacking?
I think it's going to be the Bastion Slayer soon, right? People joke, but PTR is going to be Bastion Heaven for a little while, so maybe it'll be an anti-Bastion.
Well, I mean, role-wise, then what is that? What is an anti-Bastion? Is it
a Berserker? Okay. Damage resistance, melee... centric or whatever. I don't know. I'm just making
like
stuff
a tank,
up,
basically.
Yeah, like a tank.
Yeah,
more tanks. You know.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Another tank or healer. Like, I just want to. I want it to be either support or tank.
Yeah, she says keep us safe. So like, I envision like a shield or something. But
I don't think we need another healer right now, do we?
No.
I just want another healer that has movement abilities. I'm just like, if I don't, that's
but if it's not.
Maybe they'll synergize really well with Bastion, but like make him more vulnerable at the same time.
It's either anti Omnic or anti robot, or it's pro, you know, it's gonna enhance robots, right? I would think it'd enhance robots if anything. So I don't know if it's gonna get bonus to Bastion, but I don't know, maybe it'll take El Presidente to a different level.
She's gonna make medivacs for Overwatch, so you just pick up the Siege Bastion and drop it somewhere else.
Oh my god.
Because it says there at the bottom, it says it'll be my first time flying, so I can't wait. So maybe like after this flight, she's going to be super addicted to flying, and then
can you imagine if you could drop a
you pick up your teammates with this like drone and then drop them on the high ground.
Well, what if you could pick them up and they could still be shooting, so there's just like a turret on the plane?
That'd be sick.
That would be disgusting. But yeah, we're just going nuts at this point. I'm glad that we're getting closer to a new hero being, possibly announced and in the game. And there's no other reason why this would come out. I mean, can we just all agree that this has to do with the new hero, right? Like, otherwise, this is
100%.
This is just completely worthless, to be honest.
Okay, Sombra came out right after BlizzCon.
Yep, like December.
So,
or late November.
Almost 3 months, and Ana came out about 3 months before that, right? So, we're due for another character within the next month or 2 months.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I'm excited.
I'd say it's probably gonna be sooner than later, because I don't think that they're gonna pull the same Sombra 3 year waiting period that they did.
I have this. You know what I mean? I have this weird feeling that there will be some kind of pet related abilities, you know, like sending little tiny robots like off of the guy, you know, like one of his abilities will be to create these little tiny robots that do something.
I think the engine already supports stuff like that, because I remember there was like a video of this game in like alpha. Mm-hmm. I don't remember which hero it was, but like one of their abilities was like literally like summoning this like weird, it was like if the, I don't know what the word, it would be like if Maze, what's it called? The Blizzard, whatever, it's Snowball, right? It's
the little guy.
Threw it out, like if she threw it out and it turned into like a blade of death that just like shot bullets in circles. So like, I think that there's more programming that you could do around that. And if you consider Junkrat's tire, imagine if you could like control a flying drone as a support. I don't know. There's a lot of weird stuff you could do.
That'd be amazing. If you could picture and picture.
I don't know if you guys played Evolve, but there's a hero like that. I think it's called Bucket.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
One of his abilities was like he turns into a move, like a drone that you can fly around.
All right. Well, anyways, I think it's pretty exciting. And, hopefully we'll hear a little bit more in the coming days or the coming week. But, well, until then, I'm sure there's just going to be a lot of theories being thrown out there, especially on Reddit. So we'll just have to see what happens there. Okay, well, let's move on. Let's talk about the events that happened this week. It's been most of what's been going on. It's been pretty quiet week news-wise, at least. So, Ben, why don't you start us off with TESPA, given that you casted it and you just came back from there.
Yeah, so was down in San Diego at UC San Diego for the TESPA Collegiate Series $100,000 finals. And it was top four teams that played through, I think there were 230 plus colleges participating in this event. So it was actually quite large, like over 1,000 players participated in this thing overall, and pretty decent prize pool as well. So it's not necessarily like pro level, but probably like a hair below, like really. So we saw a lot of very talented players and a lot of really, really nice team play for these teams. And it was just a really short top four teams: UC Berkeley, University of Toronto, Rutgers, and University of Texas Austin participating in this. And yeah, Austin, the birthplace of TESPA actually is Austin. So it was a single day. It was just three best of fives, two semifinals and a grand finals. But it's the first time I've casted a live event since Atlantic Showdown back in late August, whenever that was. So it felt super good to be out there. I got a chance to cast with Jamerson, who I actually casted Agents Rising with, which was like literally the first LAN tournament like the week after the game came out. So that was really awesome. I really like casting with Jamerson. And then also the guys who had been doing the TESPA stuff, the qualifiers up to this point, were also there. So it was Piscatori and Seamus. And yeah, it was tons of fun, man. It's pretty amazing. I've been in esports for 7-8 plus years now, and this is gonna sound like hyperbole, but I don't know if I've ever seen an event run so smoothly. There was not a single tech issue. There was not a single messed up throw from the casters. Like, we literally didn't have any issues at all. There were no drops. There were no sound issues. Like, literally everything worked fantastically, and we had absolutely minimal downtime. Like, a game would end, and like a match would end, and we would be set up and interviewing the teams like for the next match within 3 to 4 minutes, and then like the next game would start like 3 to 4 minutes after that. So the event just ran like butter. Unfortunately, all three games were pretty one-sided. It was 0-3, 3-1, 0-3. So the day went by really fast. It was supposed to go like an hour or two more than it did. But overall, that doesn't mean the games were not entertaining. Like, we actually had some pretty entertaining games in there. And UC Berkeley, my hometown where I'm born and raised, Berkeley, ended up winning the whole damn thing. So that was pretty cool to see for me. And actually, if you look at that Berkeley squad, a couple of those players showed enough skill to me that, you know, they should definitely be considered for some of the, you know, semi-pro and pro teams. Aligned was playing for UC Berkeley, who played for Citizen 7 at the NGE Overwatch Winter Premier. So he's already played on a pro, semi-pro team. But Style, who is mainly playing Pharah for them, actually was amazing. Like, his Pharah was super, super sick. And one of the big reasons why they played so well and dominated that tournament, their Ana play was great. Zarya play was great. Their main tank, Slurpee Thief, whose whole family, by the way, was at the event to support
him. Slurpees too.
Yeah, Slurpee Thief played incredibly well too. So it was super fun. And I don't know, man. I just really enjoy casting. It felt really good to cast another live event. And the audience was sick too. Like, they were ooing and aahing at every big play, every big ultimate showdown. Like, every time like a Pharah's were hitting midairs, this audience absolutely 100% like understood the game at a fairly high level and was reacting, which made it even more fun. That was also one of my highlights.
Yeah, it was. I was able to catch a little bit of it. I expected it to go longer. It's kind of like what you were saying. It ended so quickly because of the match. You know, the series were like very one sided. But what I did catch was, you know, obviously casting was great, but the just the feel of college esports, you know, and I think it was most evident in Heroes of the Dorm, you know, with Heroes of the Storm so far, and just seeing. You know, a college event done right at a very large level, and then just kind of seeing the family, like seeing that Slurpee, what was his name again? It was
Slurpee Thief.
Yeah, just seeing his family up there. You know, it doesn't seem like much, guys, but it actually is pretty cool to actually see that dynamic of esports and seeing, not only seeing like. You know, we've had like very young people, you know, whether it's League of Legends or StarCraft or whatnot, you know, end up winning titles, and you see their mom and dad kind of crying in the crowd. It's like there's something different about actually having the prize money be tuition, you know, and scholarships, and how that relates to their families and how happy their parents are. It's like, it's, I don't know, there's a different feeling to it. It's like, it's more of a direct, like, I can totally. Like, it's very accessible to me when I just see the parents and how, you know, they're affected by that versus like their sons just winning like $50,000 or $20,000 and they're just proud of them. You know, there's an aspect to that I think is really, really cool. And then, like you said, with the crowd and just even the, you know, the teams tweeting and whatnot, the whole college scene is super accessible. You know, we talk about all these locales and things for Overwatch, the Overwatch League that's coming up. Well, we already have locales already set with these schools already. So they already have like a base to even try to, you know, develop these locational fan bases. So, you know, I've always thought that there was potential. Obviously, college will never be bigger than the pro scene, but it, you know, the structure for the college demographic is so conducive for esports. And I'm honestly surprised that college esports isn't bigger than it is. Like right
yeah,
now,
that,
it should be
that was
bigger.
The only.
It's like crazy.
That was the only thing that was slightly disappointing was the online viewership. I think we peaked at about 9,000 concurrent viewers, which I wish it was more. I mean, the games were good, the production was good, everything was fun and good about this whole thing. If only it had gone. If only we had longer and better, more even sets, I think we actually would have hit a much higher viewership. because during the grand finals, it just like is skyrocketed straight through the roof.
Yeah.
But you know, the grand finals lasted so little time.
Yeah, that was the biggest thing. It just happened to be that way. And I linked an article from Kotaku that talked about just kind of that whole family aspect and, you know, Slurpee Thief's family being out there and just, you know, just having a great time and everything. So it's a different feel to this whole very competitive space that we're in. And I don't know, I'd like to see more show matches. So Berkeley is probably the most, probably the strongest esport organization when it comes to the colleges globally. I think it probably is the strongest college, just period. And they've led the way in my eyes in terms of creating this esports organization and developing, you know, actual teams coming from it in all kinds of different games. So not surprised that Berkeley is there, but, and you know, obviously it's great to see Texas there because I'm a Longhorn, but it would be cool to just see more show matches, you know, like school matches and things like that, because the whole, you know, like having to organize tournaments with these teams and stuff, that's hard. You know, that takes money. It's hard to organize that type of thing. But, you know, having just school versus school, you know, and maybe having it like alive, like, you know, you come over to our school, go over to their school, that could be a start to something. And I think that you could promote that event on the campus pretty easily and just, you know, get a pretty good showing at least, you know, maybe like what we had with the tournaments that we used to have, like TESPA First was doing like way back when.
Lone Star Clash.
Lone Star Clash, yeah. Just like the Lone Star Clashes, you know, like many, that sort of feel to it, but just with schools. I think people could pull that off, and it could be maybe a start to, you know, to seeing just a regular type of collegiate competitive event, because we are seeing more and more schools like creating esports, picking up esports almost like a sport at this point. And like big schools like Ohio State and, you know, like obviously Texas is huge and Berkeley's big, and we might get to the point where we'll see like conferences, you know, like they'll be playing in the conferences and we'll have like an actual national championship game, you know, at least within the U.S. and things like that. I don't know. Anyways, I think there's a huge potential in college. I've always been a huge advocate of college, and you know, hopefully TESPA, which is officially part of Blizzard now, right? So you know, hopefully they can take it to the next level with Activision and everything.
It's not, I mean, you're making it sound a lot simpler than it is, I think. I'm just going to come in here to be antagonist for a little bit.
Go for it, man.
I started an org, a fraternity when I was at Rutgers, actually.
I didn't know you.
We missed the timing by a little bit, because if this was like 4 or 5 years ago, me, Seltzer, and Clockwork could have been on the team.
Wow.
But just to pad the Rutgers stats, you know. But point being that like starting orgs is like really hard. Like Blizzard would literally have to come in and like talk to all of these colleges and be like, hey, we want to start an esports league for this game, or like if it was a bigger thing than just Blizzard. Which, I mean, there's a lot of things that would go into this, right? And like I think that this is where you start drawing questions about like Overwatch League's like reach, if that makes sense. Because I always had like this question of like, if Overwatch League is successful, are like other games going to start trying to copy the like status, you know, like come in with that same concept of like, oh, we want regionalized teams and matches at LANs at like every week and stuff. Like, imagine if Blizzard or Overwatch got that big at colleges, like would CS want to get in on that? Like, you know, because it's like all these different students at the end of the day, like student orgs that would be setting it up. So,
I mean, whether
it's a lot.
Well, so I know what you're getting at there. And in terms of like setting up, are you talking about organizations at the schools, or are you just talking about just general?
I'm just talking about like getting the school boards on board with like hosting events. Like if I'm at Rutgers, will they let us use the basketball stadium for a LAN?
Right.
Stuff like that. There's a lot of weird planning things that go into stuff like that.
Well, first off, I don't think we would need to use the basketball stadiums like to begin with. So maybe talking about like maybe an amphitheater or smaller venue on the campus to begin with, but it's already moving there. Like these schools are starting to recognize esports as a competitive sport, or, you know, whether it's actually classified the same as a sport, it's definitely a classification that's beyond club, beyond, you know, intramurals and that sort of thing. So it's already going that direction. And Tesba, you know, historically with, you know, just the Rosen brothers and Chris, you know, Chris Kelly. I mean, that's what Tesba was. Tesba was all about trying to go and educate the different schools on how to create the same organization they created at Texas. And even to the extent of, you know, making, you know, having events or producing events themselves and whatnot. Of course, nobody was able to actually make that happen like they did on Texas, unfortunately. But, you know, definitely going and opening chapters at the different schools, they were able to do that. So this isn't something that's, I think, that difficult.
No, it's definitely not a stretch. It's definitely possible. It's just like someone's going to have to grind a lot of work.
Yeah. And it just takes, honestly, it just takes a few big schools. Like, it just takes huge name schools to adopt it. Then all of a sudden, all these other places will, oh, man, that's kind of cool seeing, like, you know, these big schools. And not to mention, the big schools have a lot of alums. So if you just get, like, all the alums and the current student fan bases behind that and creating crowds and stuff at these things, then, you know, we've got 25 million people playing Overwatch. Surely, you know, we've got, like, hundreds of people at huge colleges or alumni of these huge colleges that would go and support their team, you know, at an Overwatch event. I totally see
definitely
that happening. Yeah.
Yeah. I honestly, I think if Tespa does another one, it's going to be way bigger. Like, there were a lot of really memorable moments that expand, like, got exposure on Reddit and things like that. So, yeah, I think we'll be good.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the Carbon series, which it started yesterday and started with a couple matches. So it was Immortals versus Complexity, and then Renegades versus Luminosity. And spoiler alert, if you guys haven't watched it, Immortals beat Complexity 3-0, which actually wasn't a surprise given that Complexity is going through these roster changes, you know, with Harblue leaving and them trying out a couple guys or just different people at different roles too. So I don't know, you guys catch this match? Anything stand out to you guys?
I got a chance to tune in, but I don't know. Didn't watch in incredible detail. But yeah, I mean, they're trying two new players out.
Yeah.
So I guess JKW also sitting the bench this time. I don't know if that's like a permanent thing or not. But yeah, it's always going to be difficult when you're playing with not just one, but two new players.
Yeah.
Especially in the tank roles, it's rough.
Yeah. Flame, you catch these matches or no?
Yeah. Of course.
I'm just kidding.
I guess they have like these new two players. It's Zhao and KO. I mean, they're spelled the same, but they look different. They're pronounced different, apparently.
Right.
They look good. It's just all the NA teams right now are like experimenting with this like triple DPS offense setup. And like, it's one of those like, it either works quick or it loses late. You know, it's like you either win the first fight in Snowball or you get pounded. And I feel like teams were sticking around on like these unnecessarily all-in compositions for the most of the matches yesterday. And like, it wound up creating some really weird scenarios where I don't think there were any finished maps in either series, like on Payload. And I think that there's only been one finished Payload map this entire week between EFRAG and Carbon, which is, I don't want to say depressing, but it's just showing like how
that's crazy
bizarre that they're. I mean, I've been watching everything, and so yeah, the only time that a team finished a map this week was at least in NA in those two tournaments was Immortals yesterday against Complexity on Eichenwald, which you can tell already is an outlier because who finishes Eichenwald?
Right. True.
But back to that, JKW's been out for a while now. They had Winghaven. And then for NGE land, Winghaven's now playing with Too Easy on Bench Boys. Harblue is off the roster. I don't know what his plans are. I don't know if he has plans or if he's just saying like, okay, I'm not playing with you guys anymore. We'll see what happens. But Complexity didn't look bad. They definitely had moments of greatness. It was a 3-0, but it definitely didn't need to be a 3-0. I know Nomi hit like a crazy shatter on Eichenwald that opened up the map for them. They looked really good on Oasis, too. It was closer than the series. I mean, there were a bunch of really big plays individually that, like, turned it. But that was more or less the story of all the NA Overwatch this week was, like, really big plays because teams aren't running very team-fighty ult combos anymore. Like, teams are just not running Zarya anymore. You're seeing teams not run Reinhardt sometimes anymore. So they're just kind of relying on deathmatch. So, like, it really requires somebody to turn up.
Yeah, and this type of meta or this, you know, this type of compositions, I mean, that's generally not the highest level of Overwatch, right? Like, I mean, this kind of deathmatchy, that's definitely has that's not the kind of Overwatch we see, especially in Korea, right?
I mean,
well, dive comps are popular everywhere right now.
They are.
Dive comp is popular, but it's just it's weird. I mean, I've had this argument with a bunch of people, and I'm sure someone's going to flame me for even speaking up against them again. But, like, if you don't run Zarya and stuff, like, if you don't run Reinhardt, you don't run Zarya's, you don't run, like, Annas even, teams are running, like, Zen, like, you can win. It's just, like, it's so much harder to win, you know, because, like, you have to get team wipes in this game. It's not like you can just, like, skirmish and, like, if you kill three people, but they kill three people, like, is the cart moving? And if the cart's not moving, it doesn't matter how many kills you get, you know? So, like, that's kind of the greatness of the Reinhardt and the Anna and the Zarya is, like, the Graviton will get you a team wipe, the nano-boosted Genjis will get you a team wipe, and, like, the Earth Shatters will get you a team wipe. And, like, when you start taking those out of the equation, it, like, reduces the amount of team wipes you get, which, like, in turn reduces the amount of times you cap, arguably. Unless, like we're saying, someone has, like, a crazy deathmatchy fight. But it's very...
Okay.
Some teams will argue that it's more skill-based because you need to, like, go for really synchronized dives. But
yeah, that's true. And
it's harder to execute for sure, and I don't know that it's better.
Well, I think in some ways... outside of just, you know, just how much the cams move and stuff like that, in some ways it's more fun and impressive to watch it, you know, like whenever you do have, you know, just people making just huge plays by themselves. And, you know, as a caster, as just anybody that's, you know, that's just talking about the game, and you can say, wow, that was like, you know, superstar moment type of thing, right? And you can have more of that versus, you know, comboing ults all the time and things like that, where it does obviously have a lot of skill on both sides of it, but it's not like an individual performance that all of a sudden is just crazy, or it's harder to just label it that way. So I think a lot of it is cool to watch that way. It's just I don't know. I mean, we definitely are seeing more dives, but I still feel like it's more organized dive, you know, when I'm watching some of these Korean matches than it is, you know, with some of the matches I saw, you know, with Carbon and even just one or two I saw with EFRAG too. But, anyways, like, so Immortal, that was 3-0 over Complexity. How about Renegades over a 3-1 over Luminosity?
Man, Luminosity just keeps struggling. They can't seem to dig themselves out of this rut. Renegades, obviously, very talented team.
Mm-hmm.
Recently picked up by that sponsor just like less than a month ago. But Luminosity, like at a certain point, I feel like they got to switch something up. I feel bad for them, man. They just haven't had any success in months, it feels like. What do you think, Flame?
It's NA Overwatch, man. Like, at the end of the day, that's that's like the statement of the week. Like, Selfless lost a cow open this weekend, and then one EFRAG completely destroying Renegades. Yes,
they did.
So, like, and then you have like LG has like such great talented individuals. Like, all of them are arguably like top tier players in their own right, and like they have such crazy hero pools that like any of them can switch to anything. But I think that's their weakness, honestly, is that they like keep switching, or like they don't seem like they always have the biggest game plan. They just like kind of, oh, I'm going to play McCree because we need a McCree, but then suddenly, like, their Zarya will be on Pharah, or then their Genji's on 76 now, and then, like, they all kind of just swap. But they should have done better yesterday, but again, like, when you're running triple DPS, you don't really leave yourself a lot of room for victory. And, like, I could explain why. It's just, like, you run triple DPS, right, and, like, the enemy team maybe has, like, a Zarya or a Torbjorn or a Symmetra or something, and then you're kind of just, like, banking on winning the first fight. So then, like, you lose the first fight. The enemy team, the defending team now generally has, like, ult advantage in some form. And then even if you're getting crazy deathmatchy fights, you're still fighting into ults with, like, better positioning. And then if you don't switch fast enough, you wind up just, like, continually bashing your head against the wall. And I don't understand sometimes what happens. Like, LG versus Renegades yesterday, I think it was Mangachu, were in, like, a defensive Pharah on King's Row. And LG just kept running like the same Tracer, Genji, Winston, Zenyatta thing, I think, for like 3 minutes or something. And it wasn't until overtime, like when the point is literally at that overtime tick, where someone on LG was like, oh, maybe we should go McCree or 76. But like Mangachu was literally on fire the entire time, but like nobody ever went a hero to deal with him. And like stuff like that is like, why is that like a problem? Like why is that why you're losing? So I don't know what's going on in the LG like comms, but someone needs to grab them all by the horns and
coach. Yeah. Yeah, coach. Yeah.
Kinda, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I know what you mean. All right, well, let's see. The match schedule is something they announced recently, too, so I can show it. Let me just show it real quick. So we've already had the 20th, obviously. So tonight we've got Hammers versus TL, and then Immortals versus LG. So Immortals playing back-to-back days. And then we'll have some matches on Wednesday, too, which will be Renegades TL and then Hammers in Complexity. So lots of Overwatch to watch in the next few days, these weekdays. It's always a lot of fun. But moving on to Apex. Apex Season 2 is... the group stages are starting to come to an end. And last week we were talking about this. We were like, okay, well, looks like Envy's going to be the only Western team that gets through. You know, this is kind of anticlimactic, or this, you know, Misfits and Cloud9 and, you know, and... oh my god, I'm having a brain fart here. Where's the other one? The
Fnatic.
Fnatic, yeah, Fnatic. We're just going to be out, you know, the groups. But some, you know, there are definitely some results that actually changed possibly the outcome, particularly for Cloud9. So let me show the standings right now, so you can check it out, and then we'll go into some of these matches. Yeah. So if you take a look, the biggest thing I'd say is like Group C here, where. AFB actually lost the con box, which that happened. That's like the latest match. If you guys want to go check out the VOD on OGN Global, twitch.tv. And that was really surprising. Like, I thought for sure AFB was going to beat them. Actually, I thought they were going to beat them pretty easily. And it ended up being a very highly contested match with con box actually winning, which actually put Cloud9 in a very good position to move out of that group. I think they only need one game, right? They just need 1 point to actually get out of there. So even if they lose, if as long as they get 1 point, I believe they have the tiebreaker on AFB, and they'll be able to make it out. So yeah, general thoughts on how it's looking for actually, and Fnatic too. Fnatic, I think on paper has a chance too. So you know, obviously if they win, and even if they just outscore Runaway, they have a chance. Actually, they're playing each other, so whoever wins there actually goes through. So, yeah, both of those teams actually has a shot. So, any thoughts on what's going on here and just what's developing?
It's getting intense. I mean, it's do or die now. It's really the last possible moment for these Western teams. Yeah. I think it would be a really, really cool if you come up with eight teams, you got four Korean, four Western. Like, that would be a really cool storyline going into the finals bracket. A little bit biased here, not gonna lie, but
well, Misfits really ain't cool gonna to make see it.
That. I'm definitely rooting for our Western buddies.
Actually, Misfits has a chance too. I forgot about that. Misfits actually on paper. Well,
who
has
have
a
they
shot.
Not played yet?
So I mean, they have a chance, but they have to play Lunatic High, so it's gonna be pretty rough. Okay,
but if they beat Lunatic High
3-0, if they beat them 3-0,
okay, that's
yeah.
No, that's all right. So
yeah, if they beat
Misfits, needs a 3-1.
3-1?
Yeah, 3-1 would tie them.
To force a tiebreaker.
Yeah.
So, like, that's what they're playing for. That's completely doable, I think. Lunatic High is good, but, I mean, Misfits is good. I think Misfits had a really rough start, though. They kind of got boned, I would say, as far as, like, the beginning of the games went, because they went the first day, I think, they had matches.
Yeah.
And that was, like, right after the, like, that was, like, their first matches together. It was, like, 2 days after they traveled, and it was on the tank patch.
Right.
So them losing to, I believe it was Luxury Watch that first week, or it had to have been Luxury Watch that first week, was, I think, a little bit less telling than now, obviously, like 3 or 4 weeks later. So there's hope for Misfits fans out there. 3-0 is an automatic shoo-in. Again, you can do that, though, with the Apex rule set. You just, like, have to win your King of the Hill map. the way Lunatic High is playing right now.
Okay, so this has been one of the topics, right, about just understanding how this all works. If Misfits wins 3-1, then we have a three-way tie, right? We have a three-way tie even with the game counts. So
yeah, so then they'll go to tiebreakers. Like, I think they play more matches.
Yeah, they'll actually play each other, right? And
I believe.
Just do a round robin, I guess, yeah, and figure it out. Which could actually end up in a tie again, I mean, in theory, right? So
I don't know the rules that well, yeah, as far as tiebreaker scenarios, but the one thing I don't like about this scenario is the way that the like points system works. Like if they win 3-2, it's not enough. That seems kind of weird to me, but again, it puts a lot of emphasis on those early maps. Like they're going to need to win whatever the opening King of the Hill map is. And then 2CP is definitely winnable for them. And then Lunatic High is probably going to bring them to King's Row or Gibraltar, yeah, or both if it gets that late. So pressure's on for Misfits.
Yeah.
Cloud9 got gifted.
Yeah, totally got gifted. So let's talk about Cloud9. So obviously they win, they're in. If they lose, then they have to lose. What are we talking
about? If they lose, they're in, I think, or something.
No, they have to at least win two games to get in.
No, you're right. You're right. They have to win once.
So it's tough too. And especially against...
Well, they have KDU. That's the problem. Wait, yeah. Is this upgrade? Is this updated?
I think so. I'm looking at Wiki or Team Liquid.
Yeah, I thought it was at the end though.
Pretty good. Usually.
Yeah, it's probably.
Yeah, I think it's. I think
this
it's
was right. Probably the end of like that second round for them, I guess, or the third round.
So yeah, it looks like they have to. They either have to win or they have to lose 3-2 to actually get into a tiebreaker with AFB, and yeah, so we're looking at a lot of potential ties here, which is exciting for a lot of folks. You know, that's kind of what you want to see, right? Just a really, really close matches, or at least in the group stages. This is pretty much what you would want. It's like a just last matches actually being for getting, you know, just being able to move on, basically elimination matches. So that happens. When are these matches happen? Is that today or
no? It's usually
next week.
It's probably Friday. I think Friday is Lunatic High and Envy's group, and then I'm assuming next Friday or next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday, right. Okay.
C9. Yeah, oh, my bad, too. I was thinking that there were four games for each team, but there's only three.
Yeah, so there's only three games.
Yeah. So C9, I mean, Combox was never supposed to be AF Blue.
Yeah, that was really surprising.
But the interesting thing here is that, like, AF Blue could have beaten Kungdu and Sia.
Mm-hmm. That's close.
So it makes, like, the whole bracket seem a little bit closer. I think C9 has a good shot to even just win, which is obviously great for them. But, yeah, this gives them a lot more breathing room in terms of their condition to get out.
Yeah, well, hopefully the strong C9 shows up that day and is able to take it, because it would be great. It would be great to see all four, and it looks like all four, it's still possible. The dream is still possible for all four to get there. So, you know, let's just hope. And I'm biased too. What can I say? But I'm thinking that I'm going to guess that two of them get through. And two of them don't get through.
I'll go 3-1. I could say I don't know. Like if I was gonna bet, I go all four just because. But it's probably gonna be three. I don't think Misfits can do it. I mean, I think they can Misfits do it. I just don't think that they're going to.
It's the toughest one. Yeah.
Fnatic. There's no surprises in this group. Actually, this is this group went the way it was supposed to, I believe. Like Fnatic was always going to come down to Runaway. I think Flashlux is like the weakest team at the tournament.
Yeah.
So Fnatic doesn't look good though right now. I don't think Rafflegator's in Korea. I think he had like some personal issues to take care of.
Really?
So they're coachless, and you could tell that they were coachless based off last week's games. They had like everyone switching roles all of a sudden for some, like a randomly cool Matt was playing Roadhog instead of Azaria. And like, I think Haffy was on Genji. So they're experimenting. Mm. They can win though.
I think they'll win. Actually,
I think
Fnatic will win.
Yeah, they should win. I think Runaway's got those sick pink grandma like hoodies though. So I'm not sure if like the intimidation factor is going to play into that.
No, I think those sick pink hoodies are gonna give him a pink on this diagram right here.
I don't know, man.
So, but yeah, I'll have to see. It's exciting. Definitely check that out, guys. I know it's early in the morning, but at least check the VODs out whenever you guys wake up. Pretty exciting end there. And then I guess we have e-frags at the end.
Before we move on.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's just a clip that was going semi-viral on Reddit.
Oh, okay.
From Rascal.
Sombra, yeah. Right? Yeah, let's talk about
from
Sombra.
Kongju Pantera, Rascal, played insane with Sombra. Yes. He made Sombra look so good. Always flanking, hacking the Reinhardt shield, opening it up for his team over and over and over again, winning 1v1s versus 76s, just staying alive for epically long, throwing out EMPs that hit 3, 4, 5 different people on the enemy team. Like, he made Sombra look OP.
He did.
But,
yeah.
You know, it's few and far between, but, you know, you see the potential.
Yeah, we've been talking about it just here and there, right? It was just a matter of time before we started seeing that. And, yeah, I mean, he was hacking and not dying either. You know, that was the biggest thing, right? It wasn't just like, oh, yeah, he just goes in there, hacks his Ryan Shield, dies, and then just how it goes. Now, he was actually staying alive and just continually contributing for entire fights and stuff. So, yeah, I think this is just the future. I think we'll continually see it. And right now, you don't think so?
I mean, I view it as like Kongju Panthera playing with their food. Like that Lion King scene with like Scar, and he's like sitting there like dangling the dead rat in front of his face. Yeah, that's kind of Kongju Panthera playing with flash looks.
Oh, wow. Okay. So just
like, I think Kongju Panthera is like top one or like top three in that tournament right now, easily. And Flash Lux is, they've only won one map this entire tournament. So I think they were just kind of flexing a lot there. I mean, it was a good Sombra play for sure. I just don't know if they would have normally went for it or if it was just a,
I mean, I don't think it'll become like, thing. I don't think it'll become like the regular meta or standard, but it's something that they can break out like for a meta.
Yeah, for sure. Something.
I mean, it's impressive. Watching that kind of play is just like, wow, okay, there's a lot of potential for this. All right, so why don't we move on? We got some questions, actually. That's going to be it for the events. And we've actually got some email questions to kind of round out the show. Thanks to all you folks for sending in these questions. But also, I want to give a shout-out to all the folks that are listening on iTunes. For those of you that watch it every week, they probably don't even know that we have a lot of folks that listen to this podcast on iTunes, as well as Google Podcast, and we also have it available on SoundCloud too. But a big shout out to the folks that have left us 5-star reviews and very nice comments. That ass dough 480 and eclectic 1216. Thank you so much for doing that. And for those of you that do enjoy or do listen to the show on iTunes, if you leave a nice review for us, it helps other folks find the overview and maybe get a chance to enjoy it just like you guys do. So
also, it's your opportunity to make Chris say your hilarious username.
Dadass though, man.
I'm surprised it was not 420. It was pretty close. 480.
Might as well have been.
It was 420. He knew he wouldn't have said it. It goes from a subtle troll to an obvious troll at that point.
Back off a little bit, Good point, Ben. Good point. Okay, let's talk some email questions here. Let's see. The first one we've got has to do with, actually, it's from Smeg. So actually, Smeg has a bunch of different questions. So let's start off with the first one, which is the return of 2-2-2 composition due to the D.Va nerf or just a byproduct of Apex season?
I mean, frankly, 2-2-2 is not, like, so 2-2-2 is more viable and a lot more teams are running it, but they're also running 3 DPS and they're also still running 3 tanks. Like right now, it honestly feels like almost any kind of composition is viable. And yes, I mean, obviously D.Va being nerfed is a big part of that reason. Nerfs to Ana make tanks comparatively less powerful versus DPS. But I wouldn't, it's not, you shouldn't assume that 2-2-2 is like the new standard, because the new standard seems like it's way up in the air and people are trying all different kinds of compositions in all different kinds of situations on defense and offense. So, I mean, yes, and no, I guess, is my answer to that. I don't know. What do you think, Flame?
I mean, I think the D.Va nerf definitely has a big impact on the resurgence of the 2-2-2. I don't know if it's like the fact that it, I don't know if it's like the new meta or like the defined meta, but conceptually you would run D.Va before to like deal with 76. And then like the only heroes that were semi good against D.Va were like Hog and like Zarya. Yeah. So now if the 76 can deal with the D.Va super easily, then suddenly why are you running it? And then Zarya becomes a little bit more interesting to run or like more appealing, and then maybe Genji becomes more appealing. So it's more like I definitely think that the 2-2-2 return definitely has a lot to do with D.Va's nerf, because she was taking up that second DPS or off tank whatever slot. But
yeah,
as far as the Apex meta, they've been running a lot of different things. Genji is very, very popular right now, I think, because teams nano boosting like nano Genji has always been good, but teams are running Pharah now too on a lot of maps. Mm-hmm. On King of the Hill, just because it's hard to run McCree, stuff like that. I don't know, there's a lot of different reasons, but
the meta,
I wouldn't say that there's a defined meta right now.
I think the meta right now and what we're seeing is great. I mean, it's going to settle. I think it will settle eventually, but I don't know, Bastion's coming soon.
Yeah, and and so is Mercy. Like the Mercy changes might be bigger than people think.
Okay, that's true too. He had another question that had to do with actually the Rascal Sombra and Apex and the Bastion changes coming. Do you see these two heroes being picked a lot more and becoming a foundation of the new meta? And if so, what teams do you believe are most fit or benefit the most, other than Kungdu Panthera, obviously?
Hard to say with Bastion.
Yeah, like I don't even know who is a notable Bastion player.
Bastion's definitely going to be picked. Like, there's no doubt that people are going to run him, I think, right now. At least not, even on, like, hybrid maps. I'm surprised that we don't see more Bastion currently, to be honest. Like, you can do a lot of really cheesy stuff with, like, Maywalls and, like, using Maywalls to, like, delay a Bastion setting up on some crazy spot. Mm-hmm. But when you consider the fact that now he's tankier and it's going to be harder to deal with him and they're nerfing Roadhog's cooldown, it's gonna get scary, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. It might be bye bye Reinhardt, man, actually, once that starts happening.
But I think if you but back to the question, Sombra hacks Bastion and pulls him out of siege form, so like maybe you'll start running Sombra to deal with Bastion.
Right,
you can like just EMP him and he'll pull out of his turret form, so that's cool. So maybe, I don't know. There's a lot of teams, I think, that can't really run Sombra currently just because they don't really have a quote-unquote like Sombra player. But, I mean, as far as Bastion players go, maybe the new NRG roster will be really sick with their Bastion play, but who knows?
I know. Siegel wants to play Bastion so badly.
really? That seems...
I mean, he's been talking about it forever.
I feel like it's...
the earliest days.
I don't know.
But
I don't feel like that would be great.
One thing that I think is, I think it's really funny is you see like one pro team pull out a Sombra super effectively, and I guarantee you so many more people are going to be playing Sombra on ranked now. Like it kind of reminds me, Chris, of like the early StarCraft days when like Idra would show this new Roach timing.
Right.
And then like you go up, play on ladder, and everyone's doing this exact thing. I think we're going to see a lot more Sombra, at least in ranked play, after.
But
yes, last night, I guess.
I mean, what we need, if that happens, is a bunch of, you know, guides and videos to talk about how to build around Sombra, because that's one thing that that's the hardest part, right? The thing is like, yeah, okay, you know, you can have Sombra, but, you know, at the, actually the mid levels, lower levels, people don't even know, like, okay, what am I supposed to do around it? Like, is she DPS? Is she, like, what is she exactly? And what do I replace her with? And, like, how do we build? Do we just go single tank? We go single healer? Like, what do we do?
Yeah, good luck convincing anyone to go single healer below a certain SR.
I know, right?
I've had people in GM exactly start throwing games because all we have is an Ana on defense or something, or even on King of the Hill. Like, there's way worse compositions you can have.
Yeah.
Besides, that aren't over fact, one healer.
I mean, perhaps they were just playing with their food, as you mentioned, Flame, but that's something that Kongdu Panthera did also last night, is just single solo heal.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's strong. Like,
yeah.
If you're in a ranked game, I mean, this is like off topic, but like if I'm in a ranked game, And I have a Widowmaker on my team that's not going to switch. I actually just tell my Lucio to get off Lucio and just play whatever. Like, just run single healer. It doesn't matter. Nice. And just, like, overload with DPS and just hope that that works. Because if you're relying on a Widowmaker to do damage and she's not doing damage, you might as well have someone else doing damage.
Right.
And like, does Widow really need that much heals? No.
You're not healing.
But single healer is definitely real.
There's no reason to heal dead people, right?
But then there's people in, like, below, I don't know how low, but I know that there's a lot of people who will argue with you that, like, you need, like, Ana, Lucio, Symmetra. Like, Ana, Symmetra is just not good enough or something, and that's, like, completely false. But depending on who you talk to, like, they want the triple support. That's an easy way to lose a game.
Triple support, wow.
I fight against that every time. So if anyone ever says that, I'm like, oh, God, how are you at this rank right now?
Okay, let's see. Maybe one more from Smeg since this is the first time he's written. Which one? Well, I'll let you one of you guys pick. Ben. Anyone looking interesting here?
We already kind of talked about Sombra. We've talked about ultimates in general on like a dozen different shows. I guess, I don't know. Does Sombra's ultimate charge too fast? I don't know.
I mean, yes.
Yeah,
I don't know. There's no like. It's a pretty straightforward answer. Is yes.
Yeah, I think she does too. And
one thing that I noticed too, or this was different, was like I was doing custom games and I nerfed healing to like 90% or something. It doesn't really affect Sombra much because the health pack still gave the same amount.
Oh yeah.
But conceptually, I think that there's a problem when like a hero is like destined to get the first salt, like from a design standpoint. But I think that it makes the risk a little bit lower, which is why I'm surprised that these teams running triple DPS stuff aren't running like with a Sombra. You might as well at that point.
I agree. I'm surprised.
Just like EMP and then use your quad DPS stuff to get kills. But I don't know.
I think we're at the precipice of seeing like everybody, like the EMP on display and just like everybody feeling how powerful it is and getting to a point where they have to, you know, they reevaluate or they have to nerf just the speed of her ult. It's just not a problem because nobody's playing her that much yet. Like once she does start playing a bit more, I think then that's when it'll start becoming obvious.
Well, she's an ult bot is kind of the
yeah thing. Right,
it's like that's kind of all she has is the ult. So
well, she was doing a little bit more like at least when Rascal was playing her. I think it's possible to do more. It's just that I think it takes a lot to be able to keep her alive.
I think there's two things here. One is a topic that's kind of recurring across a lot of our shows is that Sombra's ult, there's really not any way to counterplay against it. I mean, you can go invisible and throw your TP and TP right over the enemy team, and there's absolutely no way to stop that. Like it's actually impossible. Like unless you have predictive spam around corners that like decloaks her or something, there's no way to really stop Sombra's EMP, which
support Hanzo. Just throw out the wall hack.
Oh, I got you.
Amazing.
Yeah. Good point. All right, there's the one counterplay. But even still, like anyway. So that's one aspect that like it's for high level play, it's kind of frustrating that there isn't really any counterplay. And also, as Flame said, you know, you can hack, you can do damage, but really, Sombra is all about her ult. So would the character be more fun and dynamic and unique if maybe her other abilities were slightly better and her ultimate was not so important or maybe you didn't get it so fast? Like, yeah, I can definitely buy that argument.
Well, I guess the question with Sombra is, outside of Reinhardt's shield, how bad is her hack really on each character? Like, I mean, is it super powerful? She dies a lot of times.
No, she's really good. It's just, it's all positioning game. Like I had a conversation with like Taimu the other day or like last week about dive comp and stuff. And like there was a video, or I don't know which match it was, but I saw a Sombra like hacking people on Anubis point one from like the upper ledges.
Yeah, I remember we talked about this.
And like you can like, I mean, a hacked Tracer, useless. A hacked Winston, useless. A hacked Genji is useless.
Wait, how is hacking Tracer useless?
No, I mean they're useless.
Hero becomes useless. Okay. Yeah.
So like she's very good, but like you have to play her in like this weird like you can't see me. Like, you know, you like you want the Tracer to be going for your Ana, then hack her. Or like
you have to initiate first. Yeah, you have to be the initiator, basically.
Yeah, or you have to like sneak up out of the shadows and like wait for them.
Yeah.
But she's really good. It's just, it's hard, I think, to effectively use her. And I think she's probably the hero that relies most on communication. So pub sombers generally have a bad rep, because if you're not using your mic, like, oh, I EMP'd all six of them, but like no one's there to follow up, or your team didn't expect it, or
it's
Reinhardt was out of, I don't know.
It's particularly tough because she's almost like solo mission majority of the game, and then she gets her ult, and then she has to like coordinate with everybody. Otherwise, she's just sniping, you know, trying to snipe or peel people one by one. So it's a pretty hard to actually find somebody that's able to do that and will communicate, at least at the lower levels. So I don't know. Hopefully, people will learn how to play Sombra and it'll become a widely known and accepted thing, but I still see that as being very long, painful educational ride. And whenever you have people starting to play her more, because I still don't see her played at all, at least in our levels. And like you said, I think Sombra is probably one of the most, you know, she and kind of like Hanzo, kind of like the Widows before, are like the most rage inducing picks that that your teammates can have. And it's just like, God, why are you picking Sombra? You better be good. And most of the time, it's, you know, she's not very good. So, all right. So we got another question here. Actually, the last question, and we almost never take questions from console folks, or like we never not take questions. We never get questions from any console folks. So Daniel W is an actual top 500 PS4 support main, and he says, I'm in a team scrimming, I guess he scrims a lot with his team a bit, and console version has a really huge problem with balancing pharmacy. Most of the time we have the same or very similar top ranked meta as PC, but since Pharah buffs you play six mans against six mans with top Pharah, and your team doesn't have a Pharah player to match theirs, you will lose. No one ever discusses this problem. Maybe no one cares about the top meta on console, but for me and my team, it's a really huge issue, and I don't know why that has never been brought up. And if you're six manning in a high masters point game, points gain and loss is so weird and random. And then whenever we want to, man, this is a long sentence. Whenever we want a six man on ladder, we have to run our smurfs. Otherwise we lose ranks with 60%. We lose rank with 60% win percentage. So, anyways, I think the gist of it is that I think Pharah is a big problem on consoles, you know, at least the power of Pharah. And I'm guessing it's because it's hard to aim, harder to aim with Soldier, at least at the same the efficiency as it is on PC. How do you guys interpret this?
I don't know if that's so. The question goes on. Is it just
two a questions? Really?
Yeah, yeah. I don't even think he cares about the Pharah Mercy so much.
Okay. Yeah.
Is it just a console problem, or is no one on PC six manning in higher ranks? We don't have almost any tournaments. But I think it should be addressed by Blizzard. What do you think?
Nobody six mans, man.
Yeah, anyways, so like there's two, yeah. It's a two-parter, right? It's like, is Pharah Mercy overpowered on console? I have no idea. I don't have the data. I would imagine it's probably good, right? Because hitting McCree shots and 76 really shots is probably really hard on controllers. I don't know if there's like aim assist.
That's what
stuff.
I would guess too. Yeah.
But if Mercy's healing at the same rate and Pharah's doing the same damage and it's harder to just click on her with a controller, then that makes sense.
Yeah.
Nobody's six mans in NA, because that's suicide. That's how you lose friendships. That's how you kill friendships.
What?
Oh
man.
Nobody ranks six man in anything above like masters, I don't think. It's very rare that you run into a GM six stack. Point being, because if you lose, which is definitely doable unless you're like, I remember in season one, C9 used to like six stack ladder and it was the most obnoxious thing in the world, but if you lose a game like that, you like tank an entire, used to tank an entire level. I don't even know what it's like now. You probably lose like 50 points. So the gains become like 5 points for a win, 50 points for a loss. Should it be like that? I don't know.
Shouldn't be like that.
Probably, I guess. I mean, you should, if you're playing a six stack and you're losing to like solo queuers, then I think it's fair that you lose more, but,
six stack is rough. Guess, I don't even know how you solve this problem, because people really, when ranked first came out, it was like one of the hot button issues was, hey, I'm playing solo and I'm keep getting played, matched against six stacks or five stacks, whatever. And it's not fair. So basically the internal MMR adjusts your team MMR up if you have larger groups within it, because it assumes your teamwork is going to be better. So either you play against another six stack, or more likely a lot of the time, you actually end up playing against just teams with higher skill rating, higher internal MMR, or, you know, SR. So in a way, if you don't have really good teamwork with that six stack or the five or four stack or whatever, you're basically playing against like better players. And to boot, you lose more SR when you lose and you gain less SR when you win. So almost nobody at a high rank that I know, at least, six stacks ever. In fact, almost nobody does even three stacks. Like, usually it's duo queue. Sometimes you see three stacks. But it's like above three stack is so, so rare right now in the you know, the Masters GM range. Like, I basically never see it.
I mean, this brings up the whole team queuing thing, like, because I think it's really, like, the system, I understand why the system's that way. It makes sense. It's logical. You know, like, teamwork should normally, you know, just increase the skill level or just, you know, throw off the MMR a little bit in favor of you. So I kind of get that. But at the same time, like, all these things that we're talking about really discourage grouping, and especially discourage any kind of social aspect, whether it's competitive or not. I don't really care that it's like the ladder or it's quick play. And, you know, like, one ideal situation for me, at least at the lower ranks, you know, not necessarily at the top, the lower ranks, is that, you know, I want to just like have six friends that we can just climb together. You know, like, we lose, then we know it's because we, you know, we did something wrong and we just learned from it, and we can actually track our progression instead of like, okay, well, we had a thrower there, so we just got to take that loss and we just got to grind. You know, it's like more of a grind, right? So, but anyways, I think it's tough. Like, I don't want them to promote just duo queuing, solo queuing. That would suck. You know, like, I think that there should be some kind of grouping aspect to it. And it might have to be that group ladder or that team ladder that we were talking about that other games have.
And it's actually unfortunate. I don't really like the current situation, because I think you should be able to six stack and not have like a huge disadvantage if you want to. I don't know how you balance it, but I mean, Siegel was doing a six stack ranked stream the other week, like last week, and people loved it. It was so much fun to have six seasoned pros playing together. It was cool, but like, they eventually had to stop because they were gaining so little SR and they were playing against teams with higher SR averages, and it just didn't make sense for them rank wise to keep going. But it was a lot of fun to watch and probably a lot more fun to play too. So I think in an ideal situation, you have the opportunity to six stack, right?
I mean, all right. So like, when this game launched, I remember, because it was like a year ago, or it wasn't a year ago. It was a year ago when we had the discussion, because it was at PAX East. I remember thinking to myself, like, at the topic came up and I was like, you only have, like, we're only going to have ranked and quick player. Like, this game discourages playing with your friends. Because, like, one of the things that I think I love the most about TF2 is just, like, the concept of pubbing, and, like, the map would change and you'd be able to, like, rock the boat, switch the map and stuff. Yeah. But you're, you're locked right now. If you want to, like, play with your friend who's in Diamond, like, if you're me and you want to play with your friend who's in Diamond, you, like, have to almost make a new account, or else, that person's just not going to have fun. And I bring up this example because, like, Ammunition was doing sub games. This was, like, 6 months ago or probably even more. And I joined them. And we were like six stacking quick play. And I swear to you, I have never felt worse in my life, because it made the game so hard for everyone that was in the group. But I was just like trying to make it seem like it was winnable, but obviously it wasn't. So like, after one game, I just stopped, because I actually felt bad that everyone else was just having such a worse time.
Yeah. I mean, you're just one person that throws off five people's MMR, that's
it's really rough. So I don't know how you fix that. As far, like, that's a different problem than the ranked thing. I mean, personally, I would rather, if you're in top 500 or GM, you shouldn't be able to group at all. I would just rather solo queue so that the top 500 ranks mean something or are more meaningful. But in terms of being able to pub with friends, I don't like the current status of quick play, because I think it tries too hard to like balance the game, and then it doesn't let you like play the full match back and forth. And then like, people quit and they don't care because it's quick play. But
it's a little bit too casual. And I mean, there is some competitive, like I said, there's a competitive scenario where you can have a social aspect to it too. And right now it's, I don't know, right now you're definitely penalized more so, or you're encouraged not to more so than you are.
Yeah. Like I have friends, like streamers that want to play with me and like, I don't know how to, like, there's no easy way to do it right now that like is meaningful or like enjoyable.
Yeah.
Cause if I'm skewing the SR range and then suddenly my 3K friends are playing against 4K players, like,
yeah. I mean, I even had just a minor version of it with my son. I had to just drop all the way down just to play with him, you know, and not try to, and we have friends that I normally play with. I can't play with them and with my son because it just totally skews everything. So I've experienced it too, even where I am. It's definitely tough.
I think it pulls up instead of checking the box. Like, so like if you're in TF2, right? If you were like in a 12v12 server and you were like a great player, you could just like run around doing whatever you want and you would like stomp people. Yeah. And like your score would be like infinitely higher than everyone else's. And I guess maybe they want to avoid that scenario. Yeah. But I think that like it should be like that just because
I feel like it's okay.
More like, fun for, yeah, like that, yeah, I think okay, is more accessible. It's like, oh, that guy's just really good. But like, what are the odds that someone's going to come in and like try hard, super, super incredibly on like Tracer or something against a bunch of like, I don't know, gold ranked players or something.
Right.
I don't know how to fix that. There's probably like some weird game design theory logic there. But again, I can't play with diamond friends. And I think that that's kind of shitty.
Okay, well, why don't we wrap up? I know Ben's got to get going here. So why don't we do some shout outs? Flame, you want to start off? Where can people find you?
Find me in Discord. Find me on Twitch. Find me on YouTube. I made a video for lower ranked players last week. It got a lot of really good feedback.
After being to make criticized more for not doing it, you immediately made one. So yes, Flame.
Well, they were saying, like, I got yelled at. They were like, someone made a post saying, like, why does Flame hate platinum players or something?
Yep. Yep.
Like, why is he making it seem like we're not worth their time? And like, I never meant to do that. You have to realize that like trying to analyze very random, chaotic things isn't very fun. So whatever, I made a video, like how to play each hero at like a basic level. It got to the front page of our Overwatch, which was pretty cool. It wasn't edited. It was an hour long. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to make more, but it's hard because I'm realizing like there's a lot of intricacies to things that are in this game. Like I tried to do a video on just like team compositions, but you can't do that, I don't think.
No,
you have to know a lot of things before that. And it's like very, I'm trying to like figure out what the next logical step is. I think I might do a video on like just the modes and like how to play them. But that went well. So yeah, just look out for that.
Cool.
And shout out to, I guess, Dot Esports for putting out an article on me today, which was pretty sweet of them, actually.
See? Link that in there. Link that in the chat.
Find it. Come on.
While he's doing that, Fishsticks, you want to do some shout-outs?
Yeah. Thanks to everybody who tuned into the TESPA Collegiate Series over this last weekend. It was really fun to cast. And we actually got a lot of really positive feedback as well. Folks on Reddit enjoyed watching the games. Production was good. They appreciated the commentary. We definitely tried to cater the commentary to newer players. Try to, of course, give the deeper analysis when possible, but a lot of the time was really speaking to people maybe watching esports for the first time or watching collegiate Overwatch for the first time. And there's a really good response. So I had a ton of fun. And if you want to catch the VODs, you can definitely go to twitch.tv/teamtespa and do that. That's pretty much it. Week is week off of ranked. So probably not going to be playing or streaming this week. But when I do come back, look forward to streaming some more ranked adventures as well. I'm going for top 500 this season. It's happening.
Do it.
So I'm going to give it a shot.
Maybe you and Flame can duo sometime and we can watch that.
I'm losing friends, man. I tried to help Poke Climb today.
Oh, no.
I don't know if we're on talk. I mean, we're definitely on talking terms because this is a normal occurrence.
What? Okay.
But
wow.
That's why solo queue is just like, I'm just destined, you know, I'm just destined for it.
Killing friendships.
You need to find someone as equally angry as you, which is why I played with Too Easy last week.
Right. I'll round things out thanking both of you guys, obviously, for doing the show. All of you guys that have been watching, follow the show's Twitter at the Overview GG. I keep, I don't promote that enough. So you got to definitely follow that, because if you just want to know only about the overview and not, you know, everything else that I tweet online, then that's going to be the best place to do it. You can find the VODs for it on youtube.com/ChamMV. We're doing another streamer showdown this Friday, Overwatch edition. So be on the lookout for that. That will probably be on Stir's channel, but it's going to be Rachel hosting Stir, Kefri, and Poke, actually. Oh. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Got some All new stuff. Games. Yeah, got some new games we're going to be debuting too. So, yeah, be on the lookout for that. If you don't know what that is, it's my game show that I do that is going to be Overwatch or topical or everything. All the questions are going to be about Overwatch. And that's going to be it. For all the folks on iTunes, you can catch it a little bit later.